Okay.
Brett, what is it about, what is it that Joe Mantiply does that's made him so effective?
Well, I think what Joe does, he has a really good feel for speeds, and so, you know, I think his command obviously is the number one thing. He's fearless, throws like less. The other night he was up to pitch 30, I think, and we had Nelly warming up, and he threw a 3-2 changeup, I think, for the final strikeout to end his two innings. I think that's symptomatic of what he's able to do. He doesn't default to the fastball, let's say, in key situations. And you know, obviously we had taken him to his limit. I think it was 30th pitch or 30 something plus pitches at that time, so we knew we were getting into that danger area right there. And I was very relieved that he got the swing and miss. We didn't have to bring Nelly into the game, which then impacts the next day and things like that. So I'm really pushing for this guy to, you know, we have a couple candidates for that All-Star game. I think he's one of the top candidates, and nothing would please me more to see him get selected.
Seems like he's pretty effective, righties or lefties.
Yeah, actually, I think, like most left-handed pitchers, we actually feel more comfortable against righties because we have that open side to throw to. So you'll see a lot of times, you'll see what we call, you would automatically think that lefty on lefty is a given, but there's some, if you look at the numbers, you'll find some very stark differences that would surprise you. Obviously his changeup plays away, runs away from the left-handed hitter right-handed hitter very well. The breaking ball plays against both right and left-handed, and he has enough fastball to monitor against both. So he has weapons to get both-sided people out.
Brent, obviously, before coming here, he'd bounced around a little bit. He's an older guy in terms of his kind of, I guess, service times. Mm-hmm. Is he kind of that type of guy that some guys, it just takes a few different stops for things to click and.
Well, I've often said that I've said this many times before, and I started to realize this as a relatively young pitching coach, that sometimes the timelines that we place on players is incorrect. That it's their time is when they're going to be ready, not when we think they're going to be ready. You see this often when you have a prospect, let's say, who's throwing 96, and you're all excited about him, and then you become defeated or down when he doesn't quite make it in your time frame. You know, a year in Double A, a year in Triple A, you should be there, and they hit a speed bump, and then they take a step backwards. And for whatever reason, Joe, you know, probably learned from some things. I know he was very disheartened after the home run he gave up against Detroit, because Detroit was one of the teams that DFA'd him, and you know, he had that run going where I think he'd only given up one run in the whole season, and then he gave up the home run that kind of. But he was more—he was dismayed that we didn't win the game. But it was a personal thing for him. So that kind of tells you a little bit about him, that he wanted to stick it to the man, so to speak. That man being Detroit. So, but he's obviously been a big part of our pitching success. What we've had, he's been a big part of it.
Does it surprise you to hear that Joe Mantiply has more scoreless relief appearances than any other pitcher in the National League?
I did not know that. Appearances, yeah. Now, when you only give up one run all season, I guess that means that all, you know, 99% of them up until that home run were scoreless, you know. You know, he had a couple of scares. I remember a first and third, nobody out type of thing. I think I hit a line drive at the third baseman, and that's when you know you're going good. And he got out of that inning. I think you may remember the play. It was a line drive caught or a ground ball or something like that, when it looked like it was that he was going to get up a run. But he's going to get on another roll for us, and he's been a very pleasant addition.
While we're on the bullpen, what do you think's been key for Mark Melanson's turnaround? He's really, you know, went through some pretty low lows, and he seems to be coming back from it nicely.
Well, I think the biggest thing with Mark is the fact that even then, when he was going bad, he maintained a very professional approach to what he was trying to do. We have made some pitch selection changes. If you subtly look at the catcher's targeting when he's pitching now, you'll see a little bit higher glove position. Instead of it being knee or mid thigh high, you'll see some waist high targets. So he's starting to throw what I brought over from Houston, what we used to call the top shelf cutter, where we throw cutters waist high and above. sometimes higher cut pitches that has benefited him. He's getting his curveball over the plate a little bit more, but he just has maintained a very professional approach, which you would expect from someone. I don't know what he's had, 250 saves or something in his career. I mean, pretty special career, and he really prepares. He looks at how he can get better. He wants to get better. Believe me, nobody hurts more than he does when we lose a game with him on the mound. But I'm glad he's back and pitching well.
When it comes to like deciding when and who to break in a young pitching prospect who hasn't pitched in the majors yet, what's your philosophy with that? Are there certain boxes guys need to take in AAA in terms of what they're doing with their stuff, or walk rate, strikeout rate, that kind of thing?
Well, I think we monitor a great deal. Obviously, one of the ones that is a big one for me is the ability to throw something other than your fastball when you're behind in the count, something off speed, let's say, because these major league hitters really hunt. And they're like blood in the water. They're like sharks. And when they sense that a young guy cannot throw something off speed over the plate, they really start to hunt the fastball. And then they not only hunt the fastball, they hunt it in certain locations, and they anticipate things. And that's when they're really dangerous. So we monitor guys that can possibly throw a 2-1 slider or a change or something over the plate in those kind of things. Regardless of the ERAs in Reno and Amarillo, they're not important to me. What's important to me are those peripheral type things, like the pitching ahead in the count, what can you throw when you're behind in the count, what can you go to, 3-2, things like that. Do you always default back to the fastball for fear of walking somebody? So those are the things that we look at. And then as far as coming to the big leagues, I remember being in Tucson, and the late Darryl Kyle, I may have mentioned this before, was really struggling in AAA. The balls were flying, infields were rock hard, it's 110 degrees, and he kept, fighting himself. I said, believe me, things will get better when you get to the Astrodome, when it's 390 in left center and 390 in right center and 420 to dead center, and it's inside and air conditioning, you got better defensive players. And sure enough, once he went to the big leagues, he pitched better there than he did in AAA. So Reno's a very difficult place, but what you find out when we have pitchers that pitch in Reno and Amarillo is you find out who can withstand the heat, so to speak. So you find out, and I think we're seeing with our young pitchers up there now, the Henrys and all the different guys that we have up there, when they give up a home run, for example, do they come back into the strike zone, or do they start to dance away from the strike zone? Do you get a walk immediately following the home run, or do you get strike one again? I look for those guys that get strike one and go back at it. So those are the things you look for.
Are any of those guys at Reno, or do you see any of those guys who have kind of put themselves in a position to get kind of...
Yeah, we have a couple guys. We have some people, a couple in our double-A, and they're doing well. They're starting to realize the first half, you get beaten up a little bit, and fly balls are flying all over the place and going out, and you get a little discouraged. But now they're starting to hone back in. The walk rates have gone down. The percentage of strikes have gone up. First pitch strikes have gone up. Winning the first three pitches has gone up. Getting two out of the first three pitches be strikes, or at least creating contact. All those different metrics that our front office has provided give us a better picture of who we might get if and when they come here.
What did you think about Tyler Gilbert yesterday? Seems like he's
going to
stick around here.
Well, yeah, it's obviously with the Davey situation that put us in a little bit of a bind. But I thought Tyler acquitted himself very well yesterday. He had the good game in L.A. We learned a little bit from there where he was going so well, and we might have stayed with him a hair too long, and it blew up on us. Then he had the Cincinnati implosion, which is going to happen. But I thought he did a good job yesterday. Obviously, we made some plays for him that really helped out, and with each play being made, he got a little more confident. The strikeout of Longoria was big. He did make a mistake on an 0-2 changeup, which he left right down the middle. The guy got a base hit when they got the three singles in a row. That could have been disastrous for us, but getting out of that with one run was like, whew. That really was a key thing, and especially the way the game progressed. So I thought he did a nice job. He's a fearless young pitcher too. He's another guy that's been bounced around a little bit and tried to find his way. So
with Keenan Middleton, he just came back up, a younger guy. What do you like about Keenan Middleton?
Well, I saw him many times. I saw him his rookie year with the Angels when I was in Houston, and he was pumping 97, 98s, and was one of their late inning guys. And so he's very athletic, very much of a competitor. His slider has improved. I always thought he had a great changeup, which so he brings a three-pitch mix, and obviously I'm really glad to have him back. You know, he brings some stuff. You know, if you look at our bullpen, I think we're 28th or 29th in velocity. So we have to do things a little bit differently. We don't have the Sotos and that Detroit bullpen that's everybody's throwing 97 and above coming in. So with the Ramirez's and the people that we have, we just have to find different ways to maximize what we do. And Kenyon gives us a little more of the normal 95 to 96 velocity coming in. Plus a decent breaking ball too. He got a big out with a strikeout on a curveball last night, or big slider.
As a whole, how do you assess the staff through the first half?
Kind of mixed. I thought we started out very, very well. I thought, I thought we pitched better early in the season. Then we had kind of a lull. I kind of time up the lull to being after the sweep by the Dodgers here at home. The four-game sweep, we seemed to go into a little regression in terms of aggressiveness and throwing strikes and working ahead in the count, things like that. I don't know why, we just did. I didn't catch up to it quick enough, I don't think, to kind of bring it to their attention. But looking back, I think that series, I think it was a carryover from previous years playing the Dodgers. I think we're 2-9 against them right now or something like that. And so we have, I think, 8 more games with them, something like that. So it'll be interesting. We had a really tough schedule early. Given strength of schedule, but I thought we acquitted ourselves pretty well pitching-wise. Maybe it didn't show up wins and losses, although I think we were okay. I think we've righted the ship a little bit and kind of got back to pitching ahead in the count, understanding what we need to do 0-2. One of the big things I came into spring training with was elevated fastballs and evacuating the zone once we get ahead in the count, when we get the count leverage. We're still making some mistakes like Tyler made last night with the 0-2 changeup that was hit for a base hit. The 0-2 base hits, they concern me in the sense that we can expand the zone on certain hitters, and sometimes we don't do a very good job of that. So we're still trying to figure that out.
Back to the minor league environments for a moment. It was really interesting to hear you talk about the peripherals that you look at. Mm-hmm. Three of the four leagues and parks that you play in are really well known as pitchers' leagues, hitters' leagues, and hitters' parks. They only get a break in Hillsborough.
Right.
Does that make it far more challenging to develop pitching and bring it along? I hear where you're coming from about overcoming that and looking at different things, but in the big picture, does not having enough pitching parks and environments make it harder?
Well, I think what you could probably sum it up by saying what doesn't kill me is going to make me stronger. Okay. And I experienced this in Albuquerque when I was with the Dodgers, working as a pitching coach in Albuquerque. Our AA team was in San Antonio, and I remember the thought process was there that if you could hit in San Antonio, you'd be in LA. If you could pitch in Albuquerque, you would be in LA. And that kind of proved the fact that when Steve Sachs was hitting 305 in San Antonio, that called to the big leagues ahead of Jack Percani, who was hitting about 360 in Albuquerque. And you had Oral Hershiser, who was in the top 10 in ERA pitching in Albuquerque. He got called up to LA, and the rest is history. So I think having the teams like this, you have to, you know, the other thing that happens is that it affects the flight of the ball too. You know, let's say you have a Widener, for example, who has a really good fastball, and you know, there's this term we call, I always call it hop. Here we call the term carry, and that's the ball's jump on the ball and everything. It's depressed when you go to Reno. It's depressed when you go to Double A. So you don't get the same as when they go to Tacoma, all of a sudden the same pitch has a different TrackMan readout. And so that creates, so you realize when you look at 12 inches of carry in Reno might play at 17 inches here in the desert. Although this is not the greatest place to pitch either, okay, given the everything that goes on. But it beats Colorado, but it's not Miami, you know what I mean? It's not San Diego or LA, so there are some things that we have to adjust for and be wary of, and not realize that the, that the numbers in Reno are not always indicative of what you're going to get when you get to the big leagues.
Brent, you've made some comments about Zach Gallen and how, you know, some of your colleagues in Houston had big expectations for what he might be able to accomplish when you were here. How would you evaluate his first half of the season?
I would say it's better. It's above average. It's good. I don't think it's where he thinks he should be or where I think he should be. Obviously, wins and losses are not what I'm talking about here because that, you're at the whim of some things. But I think he has a low 3 ERA or something like that. I think he's had a couple hiccups which have hurt him, and it's kind of been smooth sailing for 4 innings and then a roadblock, and smooth sailing for 5 innings and then a roadblock. So just getting through that that crooked number that goes up once in a while is what's hurt him. But I still think this guy is an elite starting pitcher, and I think he will show that in the second half. We're getting one thing that we're working on. I just came from his bullpen. We're working on his slider a little bit more. He's going to utilize that a little bit more. I think that's going to be a big pitch for him. But as I've said before, he's a special cat for me. He really is.
Thanks, Brent.
We're good?
Thank you,
Brent. Okay, guys.
Awesome stuff. Really.